matter what hour your clock strikes, here it's always Halloween. And I'm always your haunted host, Luce Tomlin Brenner. Welcome to Small Frights Friday. On these more laid-back episodes, I like to share a curated selection of calls from the All Hallows Hotline and letters from the Eek Mailbag. This week, our ghostly cup runneth over. We have so much to share, so let's hop right in to our first Eek Mail. This one has the subject line, witches. I'm very excited for the new series on witches. Such a fun topic with so much history. The first thing I thought of was the newish streaming show, The Owl House. It's one of the more recent pieces of modern culture about witches. Have you seen it? I really enjoyed it. The second thing that came to mind is the witches of Greek mythology, Hecate, Circe, Medea, etc. Do you think you'll cover them in the new series? Hecate sounds a lot like the name of the Egyptian god of magic, Heka. I'm not sure if there's a connection, though. It's interesting that magic is such an important part of so many cultures. Anyways, I can't wait for the new series. Love, Drew. And Drew also recommended that we all check out the podcast Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, which is actually a podcast I really like. So that was very thoughtful of you. We are on the same wavelength, Drew. She specifically mentioned that the podcast has an episode about Hecate. So I haven't heard that one in particular. So I'm excited to check it out. And all of the lanterns out there in Halloween land should listen to it as well. I did do a little bit of research on the background of Heka and Hecate. So just to fill all of the lanterns in who are not familiar with them, Heka is one of the oldest gods of Egypt. He was recognized as early as the pre-dynastic period in Egypt, which was from 6,000 to 3,150 BCE. So we're talking the 60th century BCE. We've never gone that far back in history on this podcast before. He is, like Drew said, the god of magic and also the god of medicine in ancient Egypt. And not only was he the god of magic, but he was the personification of magic itself. He was primarily mentioned in medical texts and in magical spells and incantations. And because of this, he was relegated to the realm of superstition rather than religious belief. But that being said, he was regarded by ancient Egyptians as the power behind the gods whose names and stories have become synonymous with Egyptian culture. Now, Hecate is the goddess of Greek mythology who was capable of both good and evil and was recognized in the 5th century BCE. So 60th century versus the 5th century. So wildly different time periods. There's ancient and then there's ancient. So Hecate was especially associated with witchcraft, magic, the moon, doorways, and creatures of the night, such as hellhounds and ghosts. She's often depicted with a torch because she's out there in the night. And oftentimes in sculpture, she'll be shown with three faces representing her role as the guardian of crossroads. So very different time periods, Greek, Egyptian. There was an interesting, so my first thought was like, oh wow, like they're, you know, the Greco-Egyptian world wasn't until much closer to Common Era. So I don't even know how these two would have intersected. Like it seems like Hecate would have come before the Greeks even interacted with Egypt. However, I did learn that in the 7th century BCE, the city of Neocrates was founded in ancient Europe, and it was the first, and for much of its early history, the only permanent Greek colony in Egypt. And it was the symbiotic nexus for the interchange of Greek and Egyptian art and culture. So, 7th century, a couple centuries before Hecate was kind of a part of the Greek mythology. So it could be possible that Hecate was inspired by Hecla, but in doing my own digging further, I've not found any scholarly or historical evidence that the two are linked. However, lots of kitschy, witchy websites do like to connect them. According to researcher and folklorist David Rankine, he's the author of Hecla, The Practices of Ancient Egyptian Ritual and Magic, Hecla and Hecate are not etymologically related. He writes that the only real connection is that they're both associated with magic in their own ways. So there you have it. Hecate and Hecla, probably not connected, but I'm going to post links in the show notes of where I was pulling research from so you guys can do your own reading on that as well. I, like you, Drew, and I'm sure a lot of the lanterns as well, I'm definitely interested in both Greek mythology and Egyptian history and religion and its connection to witches. I'm still in the middle of researching and shaping the next chapter on witches, but I can tell you I'm focusing on the history of witches as they are connected to Halloween. So I have to have this narrow scope. It allows me to stay focused while I'm searching through scholarly articles and books and websites, and it ensures that this podcast doesn't morph into a brand new program called It's Always Witches, because there's an endless amount of fascinating witch history spanning the world and dating back to antiquity, as we see here with Hecate. But you're quite right when you say that magic has been very important to so many cultures. I mean, it's wild just starting to dig in and figure out a foothold and how to shape everything for this next chapter. I mean, the history of all witches would span a multi-volume book, and it would be in crushed red velvet hardcover, and it would have gilded edges, and I would buy it and read it on and off for several years, but mostly I just admire it on my bookshelf. But yes, not writing that multi-volume book. This is probably going to be another five, six, maybe seven episode series, you know, an hour to 2 hours on witches. So there will be a little bit more of a narrow focus. I might not hit everything that we want to learn about witches, but I am planning on doing this podcast for a long time. So I would love to be able to revisit all of these subjects to dig deeper and go further when the opportunities arise. But for the time being, I'm still very much in the beginning, and I hope to have a new first episode out for you guys here in a couple of weeks, and then we'll have a better idea of our starting point when it comes to witches. But please, thank you so much, Drew, for writing and asking. I got to go down a fun rabbit hole with the Greek and Egypt mythology there. That was really fun. And I would love, you know, all the other lanterns, call right in. Let me know what you're interested in. At the end of the day, I want to entertain you guys. And if every single one of you is like, no, we absolutely go hard on Hecate, then so may it be. And then finally, I was not familiar with Owl House until I read your e-mail. It's now streaming on Disney Plus, so it is accessible. According to Wikipedia, it sounds adorable. The premise is Luz Nocida is a teenage human girl who accidentally stumbles upon a portal to another world instead of going to a juvenile detention summer camp. I mean, I'm terrified of stumbling onto a portal into another world, so this really speaks to me. I'm convinced there's a portal to another world in the back of my storage crawl space, and I can't ever use it if I'm home alone in the house, because that's when the Coraline door opens, and then buttons are sewn into my eyes, and it gets crazy real quick. So I'm all here for fictional portals, not real portals. I will have to check this out on Disney Plus. Thank you so much for the fantastic recommendations and the interesting witchy ideas, Drew. I'm glad you're excited for the new chapter, as I am too. And again, all of the links relevant to Drew's email will be in the show notes, so check those out if you're interested. And now let's take a call from the All Hallows Hotline.
Good morning. I was just listening to trying to catch up to the podcast, and you were just telling a story about getting 7 cents as a trick-or-treat in your trick-or-treat bag. I'm wondering if perhaps it was a superstitious way of him trying to help the children ward off evil spirits, as the number 7 is related to biblical thoughts and being the Lord's number and whatnot. So just a thought. Anyways, thanks for everything. Keeping us company out here. Appreciate you.
Lucky number 7. Of course, caller, you are oh so very smart. I can't believe I didn't think of that when I was relaying that anecdote about getting 7 cents from my neighbor every year I went trick-or-treating. Of course, it didn't mean anything to me then, but I'm surprised retelling it. It didn't pop into my head. I was Googling to read a little bit more about the background of 7 and its biblical representations, and I found a Psychology Today article that talked about 7 being like a huge number in all different cultures, which I found really interesting. It talks about how it's been significant since ancient times. And the 7 wonders of the world, the Great Pyramids, the Hanging Gardens, the Temple of Artemis, the statue of Zeus at Olympia, the mausoleum of the Halicarnassus, the Colossus of Rhodes, and the Lighthouse of Alexandria. Wow. Those are a lot of things I've heard other people say, and I thought that I'd have no problem reading them, and I had a huge problem reading them. So, the 7 wonders of the world. The Old Testament, God created the world in 6 days. He rested on the 7th. But then the New Testament, the number 7 symbolizes the unity of the 4 corners of the earth with the Holy Trinity. Never heard of that in my life. And the number 7 is also featured in the book of Revelation. 7 churches, 7 angels, 7 seals, 7 trumpets, and 7 stars. Plus, the Quran speaks of 7 heavens, and Muslim pilgrims walk around the Kaaba in Mecca 7 times. And in Hinduism, there are 7 higher worlds and 7 underworlds. And then in Buddhism, the newborn Buddha rises up and takes 7 steps. So it's not just in Christianity. And I had no idea. So I thought this was so fascinating. Thank you so much for bringing this to my attention, caller. I'm going to drop this link into the show notes because there's some other fascinating information in there. And now I'm going to think of my 7 cents that I had as a lucky charm that he gave me. Maybe that's why I've always been so blessed by the best Halloweens. So happy to hear you're enjoying the podcast, caller, and I hope you have a fantastic rest of the week filled with all kinds of lucky sevens. All right, up next is a new email. The subject line is a trick-or-treat story for Luce. Why, thank you. You know I love the trick-or-treat stories. All right, here we go. My entire life until I was 14, I spent Halloween in the suburbs trick-or-treating. Then there was a regrettable middle school phase where I was peer pressured into thinking trick-or-treating was just for kids, so I stayed home and handed out candy. Then I went back to trick-or-treating. Very smart. When I was 14, a friend I had only met that year invited me to go trick-or-treating with her. She lived in a much more rural area than I did. I didn't think that would make Halloween night too different, but I was wrong. I knew houses in the sticks were much further apart, but for some reason, I didn't make the connection that this would make going house to house for candy a very different experience. By the way, so you can picture it, my costume that year was a cow. All right, writer, I need to know if you picked the cow because you knew you were going to do rural trick-or-treating, or if you had already decided on the cow as your costume for that year and you just happened to go rural trick-or-treating. Very funny to me. All right, the letter continues. In the suburbs, all the houses are close together. It's an easy walk, well lit, high population, but out among the farms, everything was different. First off, we didn't walk. Her parents drove our small group between houses, which was necessary since they were all so far apart and because the roads between them were completely unlit. The only light was the stars and the moon, which made for a much spookier experience. Rural areas also do decorations differently. In the suburbs, there were the normal pumpkins, fake tombstones, stuff in the windows, and there was some of that in the sticks too, but everything was so much bigger. They had decor that would have been impossible to pull off in the burbs. For one, the pumpkins are huge. It really pays to know pumpkin farmers. They're also able to use the darkness and ample space to craft a truly spooky experience. To this day, one house especially stands out in my memory. There was a long driveway lined with tall grass, and along the way there were scarecrows made of old clothes with stuffed burlap heads towering over us as we walked up to the house. They were absolutely terrifying. It was such a contrast from the store-bought scarecrows I normally see. Several houses had scarecrows that were actually people standing still until we were right up next to them, then they would jump out at us. Between that and the tall fields of corn everywhere, we got plenty of scares that night. After trick-or-treating, we went to a party at a barn. It was so old-fashioned, there was actually apple bobbing. For those who have never tried it, apple bobbing is so hard. The only way to get one is to wrestle it to the bottom of the tub with your mouth so you can push it against the bottom with enough force to actually bite into it. If you ever host an apple bobbing, make sure you provide towels like these people did. Otherwise, guests will have wet hair all night. This was definitely one of the best Halloweens of my childhood. Thanks, Allison. Allison, what a fun night. I have always wondered about rural Halloweens. And, you know, I hadn't thought of that either until I was in high school talking to friends who came from more rural areas. And they told me about how they either didn't trick or treat or they drove into the suburbs or they just did it in like their, I don't know, farm area. And it made me feel so sad for them that they were missing out on that walking house to house. But I mean, you really painted a spooky, fun picture of like walking through scary fields and how you can do so much more with that space. So if we have any lanterns out there who grew up on farms and or in more rural areas and you have that different trick-or-treating experience, I would love to hear firsthand from you as well. And yes, Allison, apple bobbing is so hard. I never tried it until I was a grown-up, and a friend had a Halloween party a few years ago here in Los Angeles where she had apple bobbing. And I was like, oh, yay, apple bobbing, so cute. Immediately was like, wait, this is it? You're just like, your mouth is just open in this bucket of water, drooling into it, where then every other person's mouth goes in and drools into it. It's kind of gross. But I never thought about it until I was like actually doing it, just like slobbering all over my face. And yeah, you're just like chomping after this apple that just continues to float along in the tub. I did not know that was the trick. That makes sense. I have bangs and that I have to style. Not to sound like the most vain person in the world, but I try not to dunk my entire face into pools of water at large social events as an adult. But yeah, so of course you have to put your whole face, your like entire head into the tub to actually get an apple. That's the kind of thing that you can do as a child because you're like, I want an apple. Once you get old enough to buy your own apples, you're not going to get your whole head wet for it. You're like, I'm just going to head to the Stop and Shop and get an apple for 15 cents. What? Am I 1,000 years old? I'm sure they're at least a dollar now. My 15-cent apple. Anyways, thank you so much for sharing this incredibly sweet, memorable, and cute Halloween experience with us, Allison. I would love to hear. Please clear up. Were you the cow before you knew you were trick-or-treating in the farm area or after? very curious because it's a super funny coincidence to me. Also, I just love when kids pick cute costumes instead of scary costumes. One of my best friends growing up was a tree one year. Just a general tree. So sweet, so pure. All right, let's open up the next Eek Mail. This one is a horror novel recommendation. Hi, Luce. Since you asked for books your Luceo lanterns have enjoyed, I would like to recommend The Scabbed Wings of Abandon by Sean Kennedy. It's a rather short read for a novel, so I hope you can check it out. Without spoiling anything beyond the inciting incident, it's about a woman exploring the afterlife, finding out it's nothing like what her upbringing had prepared her for. When I first read this book, it was so scary, I couldn't finish it. I got the shivers a few times, and as it kept getting scarier, I was jumping at sounds, feeling like I wasn't alone in my own bedroom. I put the book down on my nightstand, but still felt creeped out, so I put it in a drawer to feel better. I had nightmares about the things that I had read. Being a believer in the old adage, the only way out is through, I picked it up again and finished the book. Thankfully, that put an end to the nightmares. I hope my experience doesn't scare you away from the book. I like being scared, and as I said, finishing the book did make everything better. Thanks, Mary. Ooh, Mary, this is a very tantalizing pick. Thank you so much. I'd never heard of this book. I had some trouble tracking it down. It seems like Sean Kennedy is kind of a underground small batch writer. So it has like a very like bare bones sort of cover to it, which I think makes it seem even creepier. And your letter just made me think of the episode of Friends where Jennifer Aniston, Rachel, and Joey trade books. He wants her to read The Shining and she wants him to read Little Women. And he talks about how The Shining is so scary that he has to put it in the freezer. That has become shorthand with my mother and I for talking about a really scary book. How scary is it? Do you have to put it in the freezer? So I thought it was hilarious that you said you had to put it in the drawer. I thought that had very Joey Tribbiani energy to it. If you haven't seen Friends, listen. That's fine. I am excited about this. Thank you so much. I'd love to hear if anybody else has read it. And I love that you pick something that feels really obscure. So I'll put a link to where you can get that book in the show notes. And let's hop into our next Eek Mail. This one has the subject line, "Loving the podcast." Oh, positive start. Fantastic. Dear Luce, I came across It's Always Halloween during my research for Halloween information for myself, and I must say how helpful it's been. Aw, yay! I've been catching up daily as I walk my dog. It's been very rainy and foggy here the last couple weeks, so atmospheric. The reason I've been researching is this. I live in Australia, one of the few countries in the world that doesn't seem to celebrate Halloween or any sort of celebration or memorial festival for the deceased. Wow. Australia has a real love-hate, mostly hate, relationship with Halloween. A few Gen Xers and millennials love to get into the spooky spirit on October 31st, as we grew up with American television and culture more so than our parents' generation. However, I've found that most Aussies resist Halloween because it's American. Eye roll, that doesn't stop them from loving McDonald's. In my experience, I've found Australians as a whole are really adverse to the spooky side of life, and I don't understand why. I know the seasons are the other way around here in the Southern Hemisphere. We celebrate Samhain in March and April, and then Beltane on October 31st. However, Australians, at least the ones I've met, seem oddly adverse to anything dark or death-related. I've searched the internet and tried to find answers, but I've never really gotten any. I live in a village of around 250 people, and I always buy candy and hope that trick-or-treaters may come. Last year, in 2020, we only had one group, but the year before that, we only had three. It was so disappointing to my 9-year-old son and I, who dressed up and set up decorations. A lot of people in Australia cite stranger danger as a reason to oppose trick-or-treating. However, after I first moved into my small town 5 years ago, kids with their parents trick-or-treating was a great way for me to meet my new neighbors. I also wanted to comment on the Urban Legends episode. As I was listening, I thought, gosh, this sounds so familiar. Then I remembered a similar urban legend and experience is mentioned in Shaviza Woods' book, Things to Do When You're a Goth in the Country. Perhaps the author grew up in that same area as the caller. Keep up the great work and keep it spooky, Sephora. Wow, Sephora, thank you so much. It's so awesome to hear from an Aussie. We actually just had another Australian, a friend of mine actually, hi Rachel, sign up for the Patreon. And so I know I have two Aussie listeners for sure. I have to tell you, I have a huge crush on your country / continent. And I visited, it's the only, one of the only countries I've ever been to, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand. And I went in 2002, and I have wanted to come back ever since. It's one of my favorite places I've ever been to. But I must say that since learning that Australians don't really celebrate Halloween from an Aussie friend of mine who moved here, I was quite disappointed and very just like, that breaks my heart. Like, when I first read your email, I got it when I was driving home from the beach in Santa Monica. Isaac and I went there over the weekend, and we were driving home, and I was reading your email out loud to him, and I started tearing up just thinking about your sweet little 9-year-old boy not being able to experience Halloween after all the gussying up, the preparing with decor and costumes. It's just so sweet, and you just put so much energy into it that to not have anything really come from it just makes me feel so sad. You guys deserve the Halloween that you're prepping for. I also think it's fascinating that you've noticed in general that Aussies shy away from the darker aspects of life and culture. And I'm really interested to hear if you turn up any more info in your research, and I'll keep an eye out as well. There has to be a cultural reason for that. It's not like Australia doesn't have a very dark history, just like every other colonized country. So let's see what we can find together. Maybe we can scrape up some details, some official cultural knowledge on why Aussies are so Halloween adverse. And then thank you so much for this recommendation of this book. I've never heard of it before, Things to Do When You're Goth in the Country. Supposedly it was a big deal and it just totally flew over my head. I completely missed it. It's a book of short stories. The Penguin Random House website says that it paints a vivid image of people living on the fringes in America, people who don't do what you might expect them to do. Not stories of triumph over adversity, but something completely other. Well, that sounds fascinating. And it says here that she also won the Shirley Jackson Award for Short Fiction. So, that rings my bell too. We're going to have to start a It's Always Halloween book club. We got two recommendations this week. We usually get one once a week. I think that I've got to compile them all and keep a running list so that, we can all check in with each other. Maybe that'll be a new level on the Patreon. Something fun with a reading club. All right, let's get into another call. This one is all about a really fun pandemic Halloween weekend.
Hi, Lucy, our Halloween. It's Marco. I am such a fan of your podcast. I'm obsessed with Halloween. I am a Halloween baby born October 25th, so I have the pleasure of celebrating my birthday during the Halloween season every year. I started listening to this podcast back in September, so every time I listen to it, I'm always taken back to that wonderful time of the year, Halloween. I wanted to share with you and the listeners my past Halloween experience. As we all know, Halloween looked a little different this year with the pandemic. And I was actually kind of happy to hear from other listeners that they kind of could get stressed out and a little overwhelmed with trying to squeeze all things Halloween in the month of October. I am definitely guilty of that. I want to do it all, watch all the Halloween movies, do all the Halloween activities. And this year with the pandemic, obviously that looked a little different. So I was able to really roll back and appreciate the Halloween season without being so stressed since a lot of things were closed, and being able to do everything from home as far as celebrating. And I decided to get away for Halloweekend, and we went to wine country up in Texas. I went with my boyfriend, my dog, and my close couple of friends that we had quarantined with, and we rented a house up in Fredericksburg, and we stayed in, away from everyone, under the full moon. We made chili for dinner, which I got the idea from listeners because everyone had said that they loved making chili on Halloween. It was perfect. We made a pumpkin chili. We drank some pumpkin ale, some spiked cider, had a bonfire in the backyard, which was absolutely perfect. I had the idea of each couple coming up with a carnival game, Halloween themed, of course. And everyone was in charge of a game with a little prize if you won. And so we had a big backyard and we were able to do little carnival games, listen to some Halloween music, danced under the full moon to the Monster Mash, carved pumpkins, and had a really, really wonderful time. It was really nice to kind of slow back. Normally, I would try and do a big costume party every weekend that Halloween falls on for the past couple of years for my birthday. It was a really nice, intimate setting. It made me really appreciate the wonderful things in life, such as Halloween. And it was an amazing weekend. It was a great getaway. It under a full moon with an extra hour because of daylight savings, with my boyfriend, my dog, my close friends. It was a wonderful time. I love your podcast so much. I did want to suggest a name, Eek Freaks, to kind of tie in with the Eek Mail. I don't know. What do you guys think? Thanks so much. I love listening every single week, and I will hopefully call back soon. Take care.
Well, thank you, Marco. I am such a fan of yours. That was a lovely call, and I think Eek Freaks is hilarious and adorable, so count me in. Who are all my little Eek Freaks out there? Super cute. Let's hear it for the Eek Freaks. I love that you're a Halloween baby because that means that you're a Scorpio just like me. But my birthday's in November, but still, let's hear it for the Scorps. I love that you touched on getting stressed out with Halloween. Isn't it wild that we all love Halloween so much, yet I think each and every one of us gets to a point in the season where we start panicking because we didn't do all of the things. We don't have all the decorations. We didn't get to go to that one haunted house. We didn't make all the food. Oh my God, it's about to be over. Then it's going to be Christmas. And then we ruin the thing that we love so much because we're building this whole like idea of FOMO around things. No matter how much we do, it's always like we're focusing on the thing we didn't get to do, which of course is difficult because we love it. So we want to do all of it. But I really like that you got to step back and have what sounds like a wildly fun Halloween weekend with your boyfriend, dog, and close friends. And what a joyous event. Pumpkin chili, spiked cider, a bonfire, also known as a bone fire, carnival games, dancing under the full moon to the Monster Mash. Hello, I want an invitation this year. That sounds perfect. And I think it's great. I want us all to kind of channel that energy that we felt this year, since we were forced to wind down and we were forced to come up with a new way to celebrate, which was a little more low key. Maybe we weren't partying every weekend. Maybe we weren't going to every single event, buying every single thing that we could possibly find at Michael's or Joanne's. But let's try to channel it this year. If it's safe to, you know, get back into the swing of our regular Halloween, why don't we try to have a little bit more of the energy of slowing down, enjoying what we're able to do, not maxing ourselves out, not driving ourselves crazy, because we like this. We enjoy this. Let's remember that and not ruin it for ourselves, not like push the enjoyment to a place where none were mad at it. So that is my personal challenge to all of the Eek Freaks out there this year. Obviously, we have a few months before the intensity of the season jump starts. So we have each other. This could also be a little support group to learn how to appreciate the holiday. I love it, but I just can't enjoy it. Please send help. We will work on this together, folks. Marco, thank you so much for this joyous call. I love hearing about how people spent their Halloweens every year, but I think it's especially interesting to look at 2020 and what we were able to muster. And most of the time, it hasn't been too shabby. So keep those calls coming in. And of course, Marco, we'd love to hear from you again. I have one more. It's not quite an eek mail. It's not quite a call, but it is a tweet from listener Marissa at Grotesque Ego. And Marissa says, on the latest Small Frights, you were talking about something that is both adorable and horrifying. While not exactly the same, my sister and I have been using the phrase adorable for many years to describe things similarly. Marissa, I love this. I really, really loved it in writing. And then I feel like a big dumb sucker for not being able to actually say this horror portmanteau to get like all together. Adorable. I'm going to need you to call into the All Hallows hotline to say this word out loud. I've had a lot of trouble with words tonight. It's been a long day. How's everyone out there in Halloween land feeling? Marissa, give us a call at the All Hallows hotline. Tell us more about Adorable. The number is 802-532-DEAD. And that goes for all of you creeps and eeks out there. Let us know if you've got a recommendation that we need, if you want it, what you want to learn about witches in this upcoming chapter, those trick-or-treat memories, how you spent last Halloween. We want to hear it all. Don't hold back. You can also write us at Eek Mail, you little Eek Freaks. The address is itsalwayshalloweenpodcast@gmail.com. Plus, check us out on Instagram. Send us a direct message there if you like. It's Always Halloween Podcast is the handle on Instagram. The podcast isn't on Twitter, but I am. If you want to follow me personally, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at LTB Comedy. So other places, other ways to support the podcast, head on over to Patreon at patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween. This Sunday, March 7th at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in America, we are kicking off our unit on witches, our chapter on witches, by watching one of my all-time favorite witch movies, Practical Magic. Is it accurate? No. Is it fun, feminist, and filled with New England beauty and wonder and cable knit sweaters? You bet your bottom it is. So if you want to join in on the live stream and the discussion, please sign up on Patreon. We are accepting new members right up until we start at 5 p.m. on Sunday. So that's patreon.com/itsalwayshalloween. You can also buy merch on Redbubble. So check out our Redbubble store. The links for all of that and everything we talked about on today's podcast are in the episode show notes. So just go right there where you press play. That's where everything you need to know is. Otherwise, hey, this episode of It's Always Halloween was written and researched and performed by me, Luce Tomlin-Brenner, with wonderful help from all of our Eek Freaks, our Halloweenians, our Luceo Lanterns out there who contributed to today's episode. Thank you, all of you. And we couldn't do it without Pete. Wonderful Pete Burns, our sound engineer, who does the theme song and the editing and all the sound effects you guys love so much. So thank you, Pete. You can follow Pete at Mittenberries. Make sure you check out his brand new album, In Parallels, that just came out. It's haunting. Hey, if you're enjoying the podcast, you know, a free, easy thing you can do is write us a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps new listeners find us. And it also just cheers me up and makes my day. So thank you so very much for listening to another episode of It's Always Halloween. And come back next time, unless the scarecrows are alive and they pull you into their cornfields. Ah!